music for you growing up, what age do you remember either getting started in the household? Like for you, was it learning to play the piano first? Were your parents really strict on that? Or did you have to kind of go out and find music in order to develop?
Well, my parents didn't have a lot of music exposure growing up. I did start taking piano when I was younger and took some vocal lessons. I don't know, it was sort of a built-in thing for me to always have this desire to sing. It was sort of, I don't know, a catharsis or something. So I was involved in musical theater from a young age. But what really was a turning point for me is when I was just a young teenager, my father used to work at a college. And one day he showed up with all these vinyl albums in his trunk because the college radio station was getting rid of their vinyl library and switching formats. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, I had like 50 albums. I had never had that many albums, you know, in my life before. And in that pile of records was David Bowie, Elton John, Fleetwood Mac, Rumors. There were some early Runaways records, and there was Heart, Dreamboat Annie, and Heart, Little Queen. I remember especially the female rock albums being absolutely blown away, going, wow, I never heard women doing this, you know, so powerful in their song delivery and their performance and their writing. And that really ignited a fire in me to want to be a girl rocker, I guess you would say.
Do you still have some of those albums by chance?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
I do. And my husband is one of the biggest vinyl collectors in North America. We have a crazy vinyl library in our home that houses about 250,000 vinyl albums. Yeah, can you say OCD? It's a little...
No, I'm secretly drooling all over the console. And it's brand new, so I'm going to get in trouble for this.
Yeah, he loves music as well. And so the collection just keeps getting bigger and bigger. In fact, we had to do an addition onto our home about 4 years ago it was a multi-purpose addition. We use it as a multimedia room and we watch movies in there with our kids and stuff and have a big screen. But it's a music library.
Oh, okay. Well, I got to shift back to the interview because I just wanted to talk about all the vinyl that you have now. And oh, okay. So, sorry, I got a little sidetracked.
My husband can do a separate interview with you.
Okay. So getting back to it, a couple of your biggest hits, Metal Queen, which is going to do with my body, at the time, and you weren't happy with how they were perceived. I've read, obviously, like the bio and that, and you're pretty vocal about it. If songs like that were to come out today, do you think there'd be more of a spin of what you would want to put on it as an artist?
Well, I just think that since the 1980s, women in rock and roll music have made huge, huge strides in terms of being accepted for their actual giftings of talent, like songwriting, delivery, production. Whereas the era that I sort of came up in, it was a big era of women being objectified through music, visually, like with, you know, visual images. It was the inception of MTV and Much Music. And so the nice thing now is that I think in retrospect, the song is being perceived differently. In fact, I was talking just a few weeks ago to the lady who is the curator for the new National Music Center in Calgary that's being built. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's sort of like the Canadian Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And they were asking me if I had some memorabilia or some outfits or something they could put on display. And they were particularly interested in the Metal Queen outfit. I still have the vest from that video because she's a young woman in her 20s who is a curator. And she's like, yeah, everyone's telling me it was like a real trailblazing song for women's rights and feminism. And, you know, the song was a real song that was empowering for women. And I thought, yes, that's how I wanted it to be perceived initially. And I think in retrospect now, it's being looked at that way. But at the time, it became so popular in the hard rock world. You know, within a very short period of time, it was almost like I was iconized in the hard rock world, but not per se in the way in which I would have liked to have been, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes a ton of sense. So you've seen, obviously, society then it's developed and changed, like the industry itself has changed. And do you think then the artists have a lot more creative control now? Like, were you told basically at the time, no, this is how it's going to be, take it or leave it type thing?
That's a hard question. I'd say yes and no. I mean, like I said, the era that I grew up in was the era of big, big budget records, and everyone had a role, and there were a lot of cooks involved in creating the final product, you know, a producer, you know, art direction, marketing, And one of the things with marketing was if you had a woman that was decent looking, that was a huge selling factor. And they tried to make you look as sexy as possible because that's what they felt would sell records. And there were definitely periods in my career then when I was trying to push back against that. Also, they would, a lot of the times, try to find you songs they owned the publishing for. And, you know, there was this real mandate. If you could get songs that you own publishing rights for onto an album, you made a lot of money that way. So sometimes there was less interest in having the artist material on the album than having the publishing house material on the album. So there was a battle against that. But even today, you see that some of these huge pop artists on the few remaining major labels, there's, you know, six or seven songwriters on some of these songs, because now what exists in the digital age is sort of like producers that are like hit factories. There's groups of guys that will write songs for all the same artists, if that makes any sense. So, yeah, there's definitely still a bit of a machine that's happening out there. So I don't know really if there's more or less creative control. I think there's more of a forum to be able to put your music out there in the digital world as an independent artist. Because there's, you know, you just upload it and there it is. It's online. It's not like you have to find a record label to get proper distribution. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I was just going to go kind of like a couple of years ago at the Grammys when Beck gets the award and everybody's kind of up in arms like, oh, but Beyonce, yeah, but Beck.
Oh, please.
What?
Oh, please. Yeah.
Beck, if you look at the songwriting, it's pretty much all him on one of those albums and the whole mixing process and that. But then, like you were saying, on the flip side of it, you have something like, say, Beyonce on the pop side, where, yeah, it's teams of people coming together trying to put out a product that the mainstream will just kind of eat up. But at the same time, you'll go, it may not have the same kind of heart and soul into it that somebody who's poured a lot into it. You know what I mean?
Well, the difference to me, and not to criticize Beyonce, she's an amazing singer. So what you do is you have these, yeah, creative teams of people that are trying to create a vehicle for her voice that's going to sell her voice and her image to the public, whereas Beck is an artist. And there is a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree with you on that. Now, with you, you've gone from rock to jazz and must be coming back to this record collection. So I was going to say, like, where did you get the inspiration to try different formats when you went independently? Was it just something that you always felt like you wanted to do?
Well, I've always been interested in music history and different styles of music, and I've never felt that I had to be defined by one thing solely. I know Robert Plant has taken lots of, you know, musical diversions in his career. He worked with T-Bone Burnett and did some more folky, esoteric kind of stuff. And then his most recent endeavor, which is the Sensational Shapeshifters, that's what they were called. You know, and so he has permission to go do these different things. So, you know, I've just been really interested in different styles of music. And I'm really happy, even though maybe they weren't commercially hugely successful and I didn't make a lot of money, I'm really pleased with the diversions that I've made musically throughout my career, because I think it's made me a far better singer and a far better songwriter. And it's been a wonderful education doing it.
So with an eclectic catalog, what would we expect from a Lee Aaron show then?
Well, when we come to Timmins, you know, I do put all of my charting singles into my set because people love them and they want to hear them. And I'm so pleased, just even the fact that I've been able to write songs that have resonated with people throughout the course of my career. You know, when I launch into, say, What You Do to My Body, and I see the huge smiles on people's faces and see the memories it brings back for them, there's no greater feeling in the world. So those songs are in my set. There's a few tunes from my new album, which has been selling quite well and received really, really well. And, you know, then I throw in a couple of personal favorites. You know, the one jazz song in my set that has gotten the very most hits on YouTube, people love it. So, you know, I throw a little bit of diversity from my entire career into my set, but I've got wonderful, wonderful musicians in my band, and we are able to pull it all together. So it sounds quite seamless. It sounds like it all belongs in one show.
As a professional player and a parent, leave you with this question. What would be the most important instrument for a kid to learn?
Oh my gosh, that is such a hard question. I don't think which instrument you choose is what's most important. What I think is really important is a policy my husband and myself have adopted with our kids is we have lots of instruments in our house, but we've never forced our kids to take lessons yet. The reason is because if your child is on fire for music and they want to learn an instrument, they're going to come and ask you. But if you introduce an instrument at too young an age and you're paying for lessons and you're like, you have to practice, I'm paying for these lessons, your child will develop a disdain for music because it's not supposed to be work. It's supposed to be fun. And neither of our children have taken music lessons yet. but they're always playing on instruments at our house just because they like to hear the sound of themselves play. Our daughter has learned quite a bit of piano on her own, and she sits down and she's very creative. She can create chords, and she's written little songs herself, and she's never had a piano lesson, but she plays because she enjoys it. Down the road, in a couple of years, I know she's going to come and ask me, Mom, can I officially take lessons? But the beauty is that she actually loves to sit down at that instrument and create with it.
No, that's awesome. I know a lot of people get kind of forced into it, and like you said, they grow to hate the instrument. Or just hate music in general, but more specifically, it's like we're grown with the mentality of piano is the way to go because you'll learn the most and then you can almost play anything after that. And then people just hate the piano and they don't want anything to do with it. But it is a great instrument.
It is, and it's probably one of the easiest to learn to play, I think. But.
All right, cool. Well, thank you very much for taking some time to talk to me today. And we're looking forward to seeing you in Timmins in a couple of days.
Yeah, we're really, really looking forward to it.